Hey, everybody, so I want to jump right in today. So if you have your Bible with you, we are going to be in Acts chapter 15. If you don't have a Bible, you can use the one in the row that you're in. That's our gift to you. Go to bcnazarene.org/gatherings. And like Sheila said just a little bit ago, this is not part two of a series. This is the second part of that introduction that took like 55 minutes. So it was a really, really long introduction. But the passage that we're going to look at today, to me, this is, if I had just had to preach a message just at a moment's notice, I would either go to Luke 15 and talk about the prodigal son, or I would go to Acts 15 and look at the passage that we're going to look at today. And this passage is the passage that for the church in its best years has defined it. And for the church in its worst years, it has been the thing that has been forgotten. That this is absolutely essential. And for me and for us, it becomes our responsibility to uphold this today and to live this out. And so to give you just a little bit of a scope as what has happened is that this comes a short period after Jesus was crucified, resurrected, and raised to heaven. And word about what Jesus has done, the life that Jesus offers in terms of forgiveness for your sins, a life that is abundant, not you have to get your life cleaned up, not you have to get yourself fixed up, not you have to get all these things in order before you come to Jesus, but that God accepts you exactly as you are, invites you into relationship with him and into eternity with him at the same moment. This message starts spreading. It's kind of like, this is the only thing that I can equate it to. It's like when my kids figure out that one of their siblings has candy. Like, man, that news ripples through my house like wildfire. All of a sudden, everyone's like, I hear they're suckers. They're suckers? I would like a sucker. I don't have to do anything for this sucker. Give me a sucker. And it's almost like that's what happens. Like in the first century, people realize like, I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. I don't have to go through these obligations. I don't have to get all this in order. God just accepts me. Oh my goodness, I'm gonna go tell them. And so this word starts getting out and people just start telling everyone. And so this is like the first church meeting to figure out what they need to do about it, how they should handle all these people from all these backgrounds who are coming to faith. So we're gonna pick it up in Acts chapter 15, starting in verse 1. And I just need to give you a heads up. This passage right here, like, this is everything to me. So you're just going to need to excuse me getting overly enthusiastic as we go, okay? Or you could participate, either one, or excuse me, or not. Verse 1. It says this, while Paul and Barnabas were at Antioch of Syria, so early church leaders were at this certain city, some men from Judea arrived and began to teach the believers, unless you are circumcised, as required by the law of Moses, you cannot be saved. Paul and Barnabas disagreed with them, arguing vehemently. That's an easy word to say. Finally, the church decided to send Paul and Barnabas to Jerusalem, accompanied by some local believers, to talk to the apostles and elders about this question. And so they're out in this distant city telling people you can be saved by the grace of Jesus. Other people are saying, no, you've got to do these things as well. And so they're about to go back to Jerusalem, the hub of Christianity at that point in time, to discuss it. Verse 3, the church sent the delegates to Jerusalem, and they stopped along the way in Phoenicia in Samaria to visit the believers. They told them, much to everyone's joy, that the Gentiles too were being converted. Pause right there real quick, just so we're clear. That's us. Like, I think it's easy when we look at it, like, the Gentiles, who are those? They're anyone who wasn't Jewish. Now, some of you maybe used to be Jewish. Some of you maybe are Jewish. Like, we're glad you're here. You probably entered the wrong place. But we're still glad you're here. But like this is us. So when it says like the Gentiles were being converted, the Gentiles were coming to faith, like we should be really thrilled about that. Like, way to go, because we're all Gentiles. That'd be a great Halloween costume. What are you? I'm a Gentile. Verse 4. It's gonna be a long morning. It says, when they arrived in Jerusalem, Barnabas and Paul were welcomed by the whole church, including the apostles and elders. They reported everything God had done through them. But then, if there is a soundtrack to this text, this is where the villain music begins. You can play that in your own head. But then some of the believers who belonged to the sect of the Pharisees stood up and insisted the Gentile converts must be circumcised and required to follow the law of Moses. So again, just get this. They've been going out and saying, all you have to do is accept God in your life and you will be saved and you are entered into the church. And then these people who are responsible with upholding the law go, no, that's not okay. They have to do what we did. Like, it's not fair that they just get in scot-free when we did all these other things. And so they said, no, they've got to be circumcised and follow the law. Now, let's just, because I think we have a tendency to ignore this, let's just hold this in, like, contrast and context of where we are today. So this is what we invite you into, is we say, hey, if you are brand new to faith, if you are exploring to faith, if you have been in this church for a period of time, if you have been a Christian for 20 years, we want to encourage and equip you in your faith. And so the thing that we have designed is this class called Forward that is a three-week step in order for you to know what is your next right step in faith. And so it happens right after the 11:15 service. We provide childcare. We provide lunch for 3 weeks. And we even do it like this, that we go like, hey, it's 3 weeks long. And if you miss, when I did this in the 9 o'clock service, I was going to reference, if you miss week two, and then I realized that would put me in an awkward spot with all of you. So let's say you miss week one of this class. You say, hey, you can catch it the next month. That's perfectly fine. And some people, they talk to us, they're like, man, that's just a lot, like 3 weeks after the service, like to do that, like that's just a heavy step. Adult circumcision. Have you ever wondered why maybe there's at times more women in churches than men? That would do it, would it not? I need to share this with you so we're on the same page. This is the joke that I accidentally made in the 9 o'clock service that I just want you to be on the same page for so I can ask for forgiveness from the community as a whole. I started this. This is where my head went, as I thought, maybe if we had a higher, like, orientation process, maybe at times our worship attendance would not be so sporadic. Like, maybe if we had more we had to give on the front end to get in, maybe we would hold to higher commitments. That makes sense. But then this is what I accidentally said, is I said, maybe if you had some more skin in the game, and I probably shouldn't have said that. Let's just keep going. Let's just ignore all that happened. Verse 6, it says, so the apostles and elders met together to resolve this issue. At the meeting, after a long discussion, Peter, now we talked about this last week, we said Peter, not because of something like magical, Peter, because of what he had gone through and the stands that he had took, becomes foundational. Peter, like, you know, like in every family, in every group, you have the person that they're not like the elected leader of the group, but when something goes wrong, it's the person that you look to. That's Peter. And so Peter had gone through some stuff and taken some stands that he had become foundational to the church. Not in this unique, spooky way, in the same way that any single one of us in this room is called to and can become foundational for someone else's faith. And so Peter stands up and his words have weight. He says, he addressed them as follows. Brothers, you all know that God chose me from among you some time ago to preach to the Gentiles so that they could hear the good news and believe. God knows people's hearts, and he confirmed that he accepts Gentiles by giving them the Holy Spirit just as he did to us. He made no distinction between us and them, for he cleansed their hearts through faith. So why are you now challenging God by burdening the Gentile believers with a yoke that neither we nor our ancestors were able to bear? We believe that we are all saved the same way by the undeserved grace of the Lord Jesus. It's this moment, I always laugh at this. My grandma Jack, My grandma Jack one time said the same. She goes, "You know what makes me mad? What specific thing this time, Grandma Jack, makes you mad?" She goes, "Deathbed conversions." Really? Of all the things. And her statement was, she goes, "I've lived my whole life doing this, and they get in at the last second." And that's what they do. They go, "We've all had to do this. Certainly they should have to do this." And Peter goes, "All right, listen, here's the deal. We don't want to do this. We don't even do this well. Why are we making them do this? Like, why are we making them go through all these hoops that Jesus never talked about?" And then this is so important, verse 12. It says, "Everyone listened quietly as Barnabas and Paul told about the miraculous signs and wonders God had done through them among the Gentiles." I want to pause right here so we can feel the scope of this, okay? Because I think this gets lost. Is at this point in time, the message of what God has done is beginning to transform the world. Like, it is quite literally beginning to turn the world on its head. And we live in the aftermath of that, so we don't even understand it. Like, so give me like just 20 seconds and I can't even unpack all of this. If Christianity didn't exist, we would not have hospitals. We would not have higher education. We would not have studies in science. Women would not have rights. Like, it is just astounding the things that Christianity put on our society today. The reason why we have hospitals is because Christians were not afraid of their sick brothers and sisters, their sick neighbors, and went in to help them. It is the Christian idea of progress that history is moving forward that caused the revolution in higher education and the pursuit of science, because we believe that if there is a creator God, that he makes himself known through creation. Like, at this point in time, women had no rights. That's why polygamy in the Old Testament was such a common thing, because it's the only way that women were possibly protected. And so there's all these things that we just take for granted, because we live in the aftermath of the effect of Christianity. And the thing that happens within this is so mind-blowing that we don't even understand it. Like, I often think that we tell ourselves this narrative that Jesus was grabbed by a mob, drug out into the street, crucified quickly before the authorities could get there. That isn't what happened. The Roman civilization was the most advanced civilization that the world had ever seen up until that point in time. Like, it had more technological advances than anyone had ever seen. It had a better legal system than anyone had ever seen. And the Roman government tried Jesus because they didn't know what to do with him. And the judge in the case actually says, "I have no idea what this man has done wrong, but you're all so worked up about it. In order to keep the peace, let's crucify him." And so the government crucifies him. And less than 300 years later, they name Christianity as their official religion. Think of this. The government that executed Jesus later claims him as their savior. Is that not just unreal? Like, that's the most phenomenal thing in the world to think of. Like, we have never seen anything like that ever before. And so this is the start of it. And what is happening is these people are going out and they don't even know what to do. They go, "God saved me. I want to tell everyone." And so they kind of meet together and they go, "Hey, no one's asking for permission. Everyone's just going to do it. What should we do about this?" And then this is such a key point. I love this. Verse 13. It says, "When they had finished, James..." Now, James is so important. Okay, so James is the brother of Jesus. If you would look through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the stories of Jesus' life, we don't see James pop up because he's not there. Like, it's not like James was in the background hanging out with Jesus. Like he's nowhere to be found. And so I ask you, this is such an important thing. What would it take for you to be convinced that one of your siblings was the Son of God? Like, what would it take? You would go, if they fed 5,000 people, I would go, nope, not enough. I knew who they were growing up. What if they walked on water? My sisters poked me in the eyes. It's not enough. So, okay, how about this? Would it be enough if your sibling died and rose from the grave. Would that be enough? Yeah, that'd probably be enough. James thought so too. Like, look at this. Like, that's what it took for James. He didn't believe any of the other miracles. And when Jesus had resurrected from the grave, he went, yep, that's the guy. And so he stands there. The brother of Jesus. So James stood and said, brothers, listen to me. Peter has told you about the first time God visited the Gentiles to take from them a people for himself. And this conversion of Gentiles is exactly what the prophets predicted. And so he references this passage from the Old Testament prophet Amos, and it says this. He says, as it is written, afterward, I will return and restore the fallen house of David. I will rebuild its ruins and restore it so that the rest of humanity might seek the Lord, including the Gentiles. All those I have called to be mine, the Lord has spoken. He who made these things known so long ago. And then James gives his decision. So they have this question. Should the Gentiles have to be circumcised? Should the Gentiles have to obey the law? Should everyone else have to get their lives cleaned up before they follow God? He says, and so my judgment is that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. He said, let's not make it hard. Let's make it as easy as possible for people to come to faith. And this verse right here, I believe, explains why some of you left the church. And it's always fascinating to me when I hear these stories as to why people left the church. And the reason that we give is never the actual reason. And we'll say things like this, like, I left the church because the church is full of hypocrites. The Bible never says that the church is not full of hypocrites. Like, it's not there. So that's not the reason. Or I didn't believe this anymore. I didn't believe that. Like, well, those usually are not essential to faith. Let me tell you why some of you left the church. It's because somebody made it really hard for you to come to God. They did. And there was no reason for it. That they either told you you had to dress a certain way or act a certain way or talk a certain way or go through all these different hoops. Or they talked about the message of Jesus in a way that either like didn't sound intriguing or it was just inaccessible to you at the time. And that's why so many of us left. My story is this, is when I was in high school, my best friend didn't know God, wasn't a Christian, and was intrigued and started asking questions. And so I invited him to church. And I realized in that moment, I thought it was a good thing. I thought it was what I was supposed to do. But I realized in that moment that my church, the church that I love, the church that I grew up in, was not designed for my friend in mind. Because it was above his head, and to him it was pointless. And so he sat there through the service, bored the majority of the time. 2/3 of the way through the sermon, he pulled out the hymnal. Then he found that there were patriotic hymns in the back of the hymnal. And then he stumbled upon God Save the Queen. I don't know why God Save the Queen is in the back of many hymnals. Like, are we afraid that the Queen of England is gonna wander her way into a Protestant church in the States? Just in case if she comes, let's have God Save the Queen in there. And my friend began singing God Save the Queen during the sermon. It was fantastic. But he left and he never came back. Because my church made it hard for him to come to faith. And this is what I felt in that moment. This was like the resolve within myself. Is I thought, if I ever get a chance to help lead a church, because I never thought I would have this chance. If I ever get a chance to be a part of something, I will do everything I can to make sure that we are not making it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. I want to do everything I can. And while that is so important to understand, it cannot be forgotten. It must guide us and it must shape us in who we are. But then there's this other piece, because James says something next right after this. In verse 20 through 21, it says, instead, We should write and tell them to abstain from eating food offered to idols, from sexual immorality, from eating the meat of strangled animals, and from consuming blood. For these laws of Moses have been preached in Jewish synagogues in every city on every Sabbath for many generations. Let me explain this because this may not make sense. Verse 20, if we could go back to this. This is what they ask, is they say, all right, listen, here's the deal. This is the entire law that they were required to obey. Did you get it? Like all that. That's what they were required to obey. 613 different commands. And so he comes up with this and he goes, all right, listen, this is what we're gonna ask him. We're gonna ask him to do four things. We're gonna ask them not to worship other gods by what they eat. We're gonna ask them not to be perverts. We're gonna ask them not to be gross. And we're gonna ask them not to be vampires. Like, is that enough? And this is what is like, there's some people that they misunderstand this and they're like, well, why did those four? This is all he's saying. He's saying, we're taking all these new people in faith who have no understanding of our tradition, our customs, our culture, our background. And these four are the most offensive things to our people. So let's just ask them if they could possibly not to be as offensive as possible. Let's ask them to be considerate of those who already have faith. You see, here's the interesting thing. While verse 19 explains for many of us why we left, verse 20 explains why some of you stayed and had a hard time when your church changed over the years. And it's because at times the church has struggled with being considerate. And it's hard. Like, it really is. It's hard. And so James, in this one moment, he says, we will not sacrifice the mission. But we're not just going to railroad over all the people who are already in faith. We're going to attempt to be considerate. And so that's what we want to do as a church. And so we went through this months-long process of setting a sound policy. And this is what we were attempting to do. Is we said, we want the music and everything we do within the music part of the service to be appealing and engaging to someone who doesn't know God. And yet we don't want it to be so loud that those who cannot handle that level of sound are running out in masses. And sometimes it's really hard to find that balance, I'll be honest with you. We say, hey, we're not gonna be able to please everyone, I understand that, but we will not sacrifice the mission, and yet we will attempt to be considerate. Every Saturday night, after I have looked over my sermon notes over and over again, this is a little weird for me to admit, I pick out what I'm going to wear on Sunday. And I have this fantastic thing that YouTube documents every week what I wore the Sunday before. It's fantastic. I wish all of you had the similar thing. You know, nope, not that shirt again. There we go. And so I do it. And let me just be honest with you. Is I would love to say, like, I just pick out and I don't really care. I just put it on. Like, this is like a tuxedo for me. I am t-shirt and jeans all the way through at my best. Now I understand that and going like, hey, we have people who show up in shorts and a t-shirt even when it's 20 degrees outside. And I look at you and I go, where is your mother? But that's fine. And we have other people who wear suits every single week. And so I go, hey, I'm going to attempt to be considerate. And I have people every week who tease me that my shirt isn't tucked in. And other people go, I like that you dress how you do. And so I have decided that I'm just going to attempt to appease both people. And I'm going to start tucking my shirt in. But just in the front. You know, people wear this now, like this is a thing. I call it the shirt mullet. Business. Party. What has happened to our service? I apologize, it was me. No, this is why this is so important. Is if we lose verse 19, if we forget about verse 19, that we should not make it difficult, then this is what happens. We cease to be the living body of Christ and we become a museum to the past. And you have been in churches that have made that sacrifice. And we will not be that church. But if we lose verse 20 and 21, then what happens is we cater to a very small group of people, and we believe that a multi-generational church is better. Like, we believe it's better. We believe we need the liveliness and we need the maturity at the same time. And so while it would be easier for us to go, we're not gonna be considerate, we don't care, we're just gonna do this, we've decided that's not gonna be who we are because we believe it is better this way. And we understand this, that our unity as a church will never, ever be found in our preferences. I cannot find unity in my own house around our preferences when Netflix comes on the TV. It's not gonna happen here. But that our unity will be found in our purpose. And so what's our purpose? It's right here. So my judgment is that we should not make it difficult for those who are turning to God. And when we have embodied this, the church has changed the world. And when we have forgotten this, we've become a museum and a relic to the past. But when the church has owned this, and each individual person has said, no, this is my responsibility, this is my call, this is who I am, we've transformed lives. And when we forget this, we slowly die. And I bring this up today, honestly, for this reason. Is I believe that the thing that God did within the confines of the Roman Empire, the thing that Jesus has done throughout history through the church, I believe it's the same thing that he's doing today. And I believe that God is moving in such a way that he's calling people back to him en masse, one at a time. And you have heard as a church, you have heard some of these stories of transformation. You have heard Larry Howard's story of recovery. You've heard Ryan Webb's story. You have heard VJ's story. You have heard some of these stories that we have shown over and over again about the power of God in someone's life. But honestly, the stories that you haven't heard is the one that I get to hear every single week. It's the people who I meet in the lobby. I met someone 2 weeks ago in the lobby and I went up to meet them. It was their first time here. And they were crying the entire time, and this is all they could get out. I have looked my entire life for a place like this, and now I feel at home. And so I just want to share one piece with you on this. I want to share a couple numbers, and I usually resist doing this, but some of you are engineers, and you can't handle a lack of numbers. So you just need to know the church calendar in terms of attendance, it's cyclical. It changes over time. In July, we always think God has left us because most of you go south. And then September, God comes back. And so are you. And so I just want to give you attendance numbers from the last 2 years for the month of January. 2 years ago in January as a church, we averaged 780 people here on a Sunday morning. Last January, we averaged 855 people here on a Sunday morning. This past January, we have averaged 1,075 people here on a Sunday morning. Isn't that incredible? And honestly, what I believe is this, is I don't believe people are looking for a small church or a big church. I don't think people are looking to avoid a small church or a big church. I think people are looking for a place where God is alive and the people are real. And that is embodied here in this moment. So, I bring that up for three reasons. Because there's three things going on that I need to tell you about. And I need to talk to you about something that is happening that must keep happening. I need to talk to you about something that is about to happen. And I need to talk to you about something that must happen. Make sense? Confusing enough? So here's the first one. I need to talk to you about something that is happening that must keep happening. And I see it in this. I see it, there was a time in as we were talking about what we were gonna do within the recovery field, which our Celebrate Recovery launched two Wednesdays ago, and I'm so excited about it. But that is, we were looking at what we could do, and I had a conversation with Larry Howard. And Larry Howard was tired of our research and everything else. And so he looked at me and he said, Kevin, here's the deal. And in my memory, he grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me in close. I don't think that's what happened, but he said, I believe God is calling me to lead this. So we can start it here, or I'm gonna go do it somewhere else. But I believe this is what God is leading me to do. So I said, all right, Larry, we're doing it here. And another story is Robbie Brown, our coffee manager at the Bridge Cafe. I found out like 3 weeks ago. He goes, we're starting a worship service at the Bridge Cafe. We're going to have a live band and a simulcast of the message. Okay, Robbie. No permission, no asking. This is what we're doing. And that is the thing that has been happening that honestly must keep happening. And we describe it as a staff like this, that our hope would be unleashed. That our hope that we have found was never meant to be contained. It was always meant to be unleashed. We are called to be rivers of hope, not reservoirs. We are not called to be a cul-de-sac. We are called to be a highway that people can enter into. And honestly, this confession comes with an apology because I don't believe that we have done a great job of empowering you to do that, or at least letting you know that you already have permission. And so there's a group of young adults in our church that are, I love this, they are plotting for the salvation of their friends and neighbors. Because that's what we all did as young adults, right? Sat around and plotted for the salvation of those that we knew. So they had a Super Smash Brothers tournament a couple weeks ago to get their friends in the building. But they had a meeting recently, and this is what was said at the meeting. They said, listen, here's the deal. We're going to start small groups over and over again. Our groups are going to multiply. We're going to start with the starting point curriculum, and we're just going to keep going and develop leaders and build a network of small groups within our church. And then this is what the last thing that was said, and we're not going to ask the church's permission to do it. And we go, you don't need my permission. You don't need my permission to go do what God is leading you to do. And this is what I want you to know. You don't need my permission. You already have it. And I believe in this sense. I believe an important thing for people connecting to God is they need to connect to other people, right? Like that is part of your story. It wasn't probably that you just wandered into church one day and the light of heaven shone down upon you and then you began preaching the gospel all over the world. I'm guessing that's not it. It's that there's someone who you were connected to, someone who befriended you, someone who came alongside you and helped you see what it looked like to follow Jesus and made that intriguing to you. And so we want to release you to do that. And so this is what we're going to start this summer, and we're going to keep this going from here on out. Up until this point in time, we have really only as a church had one type of small group, and it's a group that got together and had conversation and studied. And we went, that's not great for helping people connect, and we have people who are passionate about so many other things. And so we want your passion for God and your passion for something to intersect with a passion for people. And so we want to release you. To connect people, to start a group of any kind. And it can be softball, it can be cycling, it can be a book, it could be a study, it could be any single thing, but we want to play a role of saying, hey, we want to release you to do this, and we will help train you, we will help promote you, and we will help connect you, and then we will let you run with the call that God has put on your life. And so I want you to know, if you're intrigued about this, you can go to this URL, and we're going to be talking about this over the next couple months. And the thing that really honestly just bothered me as it came in like this is I started hearing stories of people who had connected with their friends, invited their friends to church, and then said, my friend needs a small group, but my group is full, and I don't have a place to put them. But that's stupid. Like, right? I go, I brought a friend into church. They love it. I told them about how awesome groups are. And then I told them, go find your own. This is mine. That's just dumb. And man, I designed that system. And so I want to break it. And let's do something that works that actually releases you to do that. And so that's the thing that is happening that must keep happening. Second thing, something that is about to happen. We've talked for the last couple months about planning 3 campuses in the next 18 months. And I just want to be honest with you, there is no perfect time for us to do this. And I don't believe we need perfect timing. I believe we have a perfect God, and that will be enough within this. And so one of the conversations that has come up is we have a large contingent of our church that is from Fairborn. And so we've started talking about that. Hey, what does that look like? Should that happen? And there's been concern of going, is that too close? Is that necessary? Should we actually do that? Are we being led to do that? And we're in a meeting a couple months ago, and I was sitting next to Matt Scruggs, our technical director, who has lived his entire life in Fairborn. because he's a world traveler. Sorry, Matt. Apologize. I had very little sleep last night, if I could just acknowledge that from a two-year-old. And I looked at Matt and I said, Matt, like we've talked about this, do you think Fairborn needs a church? He said, absolutely. I said, all right, Matt, do you feel like you're the one that God is leading to lead that church? And he said, give me a second. And I think he texted his wife, which is just, that's a good move. Like, that's just a smart move within there. And about 30 seconds later, he looked back. He said, yeah, I feel like that is what God is leading me to do. So, in September of 2019, we are going to be planting a campus in the city of Fairborn. And I want you to know, we will have more information about this as we get closer. You're actually going to hear a little bit more later in the service today. But this is what I have told Matt, because Matt is going to be our campus pastor for that church. As I said, here's the deal. I have said, you have a hunting license. Anyone who will go with you, you can take. There are no people who are off limits. Now, know this. If you invite staff to go with you, and they do, they are no longer paid. Just so we're clear, but they can still go. If you could convince them, all the more power to you. And say, hey, you can go. And so here's the deal. I believe that God is calling some of you to go with Matt and to plant a campus there. And some of you play significant roles here. And God is calling some of you to step up and replace them in their significant roles that they play here. And there's this piece within there when we talk about, I know there's this concern that comes in and people are like, well, what about this? What are we going to do? How is that going to work? And then it always comes up with this, like, what if we lose too many of our people? Two things. First off, I don't have any people. Like, they're not my people. If I do, it's the five members of my family who usually don't claim me as their own anyway, okay? So I don't have any people. And the reality is this, is that we're not just part of a church, we're part of a kingdom. And you don't lose people in the kingdom. You send them, you launch them. And so that's what we're going to do. And so I want us to see that, because that's so important that we can go do that. And I had a second point, but I can't remember what it was because we've had a long day. And so if you're interested in Fairborn, you can go here and we will show you this and talk about this in the months to come. But it answers many of the initial questions that people have. So that's something that is happening that must keep happening. That is something about to happen. And honestly, this is the most important one. Something that has to happen. Something that absolutely must happen that, to be honest with you, might not. And so we started this hour and 20 minute long sermon last week, talking about the need for a deeper character, talking about the need to become foundational. And you may go, what does Acts 15 have to do with the need for a deeper character? And the answer is absolutely everything. And this is what has to happen, is that our character is recovered. Our emphasis on character is recovered. And I'm going to attempt to explain this, and I might do a really poor job. So when you get what I'm saying, I need you to start to nod so I know when to quit talking, okay? And here's the thing that is so important. You don't get character by focusing on character. In the same way that you don't get humility by focusing on humility. Does that make sense? You can't go, I'm going to try really, really hard to be humble, because all you end up thinking about is yourself and how humble you are, which is the opposite of humility. The essence of character is not honesty and integrity. The essence of character at the core is selflessness. And so you cannot become selfless. You cannot have that character by putting your focus on developing character. That makes sense? It's only by abandoning yourself and getting caught up in something bigger than yourself, that character is developed. And this is what I've watched over the years, is I have watched people at times, and I honor the desire, I really do, I honor the desire, but it comes out in this statement. I really want to go deep in my faith, That's what I want. I really want to go deep in my faith. And that becomes the most self-sabotaging thing to your faith that you could ever do, because this is what ends up happening. Saying I want to go deep in my faith means I'm going to move all the superficial things and all the surface level people of my life so I can have deeper theological conversations and extended prayer time. And at no point in time did Jesus say, when he's questioned by the religious leaders and they say, what is the greatest commandment? He doesn't say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and spend all your time in prayer and read really big books on theology and memorize as many Bible verses as possible. Wait, just so we're on the same page. We understand he didn't say that, right? What was that? No, he said this. What's the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then he says, this is so important. He says, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Because what God is seeking to do is not for you to just be so focused on him that you're so wrapped up in yourself that you become a narcissist. It's that you would love those around you. And that is how your character is developed. And so this is what I believe, that if you're going to, and I believe you can, if you're going to take your place alongside Peter, who Jesus would say, and you are the rock, and on this rock I will build my church. If you're going to take your place alongside Nehemiah, who would say, I'm doing a great work, I cannot come down. If you're going to take your place alongside Ruth, who would say, where you go, I go, your people are my people. If you're going to take your place alongside Esther, who would have the courage when in the moment with the opportunity to save her people would say, if I die, I die. If you're going to take your place in that, it's not by focusing on character that you'll acquire that. It's by losing yourself to the mission. It's by getting wrapped up in what God is doing that you forget yourself, that you become strong. Give me 30 seconds more than I planned on talking about, okay? This is the essence of all of your life. If your focus in your life is on what I get out of it, it becomes self-defeating to your growth and development. Let me just make it really blunt and honest. If you were to ask me, what personal benefit luxury do I derive from having four small children? The answer is none. Now, don't get me wrong. I love my family to pieces. I do. I love them. But there is no, like, it's really the waking up in the morning at 2 a.m. with your 2-year-old sons kicking you in the head because he has to go potty because you're working on potty training. That's what I love. That was last night, just to be clear. Like, it's not there. But if your focus within this is to say that through this love, I'm going to abandon and lose myself, that's how you become strong. That's how you grow. That's how God does the work in your life. And so if you enter into your life seeking what you can gain from it, you will gain the world and forfeit your soul. But if you figure out what James figured out, we shouldn't make it difficult. We should do everything we can to make it easy for those who are turning to God. You will find what God offers you. And this is my hope, is that in the same way that James figured it out, that you may figure it out. But I also want to show you how my friend Matt figured it out. Here's his story.
I am Matt Scruggs, and I am going to be the campus pastor for the newest BCN church plant in Fairborn, Ohio, my hometown. So I am most excited about this because this is something that God has been laying on my heart for the last 4.5 years, and I didn't even know it until now. I came in as the tech guy, as the audiovisual person, who my job is to facilitate our worship experiences, create videos. And so my passion was in the tech side of things, in the creative side of things. I wanted to make things the coolest they could be for God. And over time, I've been seeing how my joy for the ministry has been more about seeing people's lives changed through God's amazing love and his amazing power. seeing the people tell their baptism stories about how God has transformed them and how they're celebrating that hope brings me more joy than anything else. When we are in worship service and I look up and I see people that I personally know raising their hands and worshiping God, where their lives have been changed so drastically, and they're now reaching up and praising the God of our universe. That's what gives me joy. That's what moves me now. But more recently, the church staff team and our spouses had the opportunity to go down to Catalyst, which is this couple-day conference where we get to worship and listen to prominent ministry leaders on the best ways we can lead our ministry and our teams. And there are a couple breakout sessions where we get to worship, and that is so amazing because I was there with my wife, and being the tech guy, I'm usually stuck in the back. So being able to stand next to my wife and worship was the most amazing thing. But we were singing the song Reckless Love, and we sing it at BCN, and I love that song so much because it talks about how God's love is so reckless. It seems so reckless to us. The amount and the things he will go through and has gone through to be able to reach us with his love. And in that song, it has the lines where it talks about there's no shadow he won't light up, no mountain he won't climb up. There's no wall he won't kick down or lie he won't tear down coming after us. And we were singing that song and I had my eyes closed and I was bawling my eyes out because I was feeling that personally. I was so grateful in that moment, feeling the weight of what God has done. And then I opened my eyes and I looked around the arena we were in and I saw the empty seats. And normally I would be thinking about the people at BCN, thinking, man, I wish this leader was here. I wish this volunteer person was here to experience this with us. That's what I would normally be thinking. But in that moment, I was heartbroken, even more so, because I saw my neighbors in those seats. I saw my friends, my high school classmates. I saw my family members in those seats. And I was wishing they were there not to experience this leadership conference, but to experience this reckless love that God wants us to feel, and that is from him, and that transformation and that amazing life that he can give us. And now I'm standing in my hometown, where my neighbors are, where my friends are, my high school's classmates are, and my family is. And when we are talking about coming here, start a church as a possibility, I knew that I had to be a part of it because I want people to feel that reckless love. I want my town, my city, the place where I've lived my whole life, to be transformed by that love. I want people to know Jesus in my hometown like I have never known him before. And I am so excited that we have a church like we do because we get to take this culture that we have at BCN that so many people love and we get to take it to other places. And I am so grateful that our next place is going to be in my hometown of Fairborn.